This is a Wild Games Production podcast. You're listening to the Old School Blues Podcast.
The Old School Blues Podcast. This is episode number 3. I'm Vin, sitting alongside Eric Tinka.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we're back with another exciting episode. So we're 2 episodes. It's the 3rd episode in. We're growing strong, waiting for some reviews on iTunes. So if someone, people get out there and maybe give us a review or two so people know how well we're doing, or give us some feedback on iTunes, we'd appreciate that. Head over to iTunes, pop in Old School Blues Podcast, rate us some stars, and write down a little blurb. What do you say, Eric?
Come on, folks. You're out there. I know you people read the blog. You know that when you put out a podcast, I mention it. So if you can't say it, you don't know about it, please, feedback. We thrive on it. It's our food.
Yeah, it's our food. So we're starving right now?
Well, I mean, I could probably afford to starve for a while and still live off my fat, but that's besides the point.
Oh, man. So I guess the number one question I've been getting emails about for us, Eric, and you're the actual expert on this. So before
not an expert.
This has nothing really to do with gaming itself, but
okay.
We keep getting this. Well, first of all, oldschoolpodcast@dgstexas.com. That's dgstexas.com, oldschoolpodcast. And we're located at dgstexas.com is our website. But we keep getting some emails like, you have any pointers for running a successful Kickstart for an old school project? And I'm just like, I know Eric critiques a lot of Kickstarters and has some good opinions to help people.
Okay.
So let me throw that at you, Eric.
Now, this is specifically, well, or any kind of gaming Kickstarter.
I think the emails specifically are related to old school things. So, for example, say your Sword and Wizardry Light that you're working on.
Right.
Say you decide to do a Kickstarter. What are like the 4 top things that you have always looked at and went, ha, if I can only do this type thing, to give those people a little tip?
Well, I'll start out with this. If I ever decide to do a Kickstarter, you better put me on suicide watch because no. But in any case, and all that being said, whatever you're doing, whatever project you are planning, please, I beg of you, have it written first. I'm not saying you necessarily have to have your art assets in place, although you probably should have an idea of who you're going to use and the size of the pieces as you do your layout. But you have to have it written. The core product that you're presenting to people should be written.
Right.
Some people just pitch an idea, and when we call out one project, Far West, which funded 5 years ago, and as at the end of this year, will be 5 years late.
Whoa.
And it's still supposedly in layout, being written, whatever. Obviously, it wasn't written prior.
Oh.
And whatever happened in the meantime, life tends to give you curveballs. So at least if you have it written before you go live, that's one less curveball that life can throw at you.
So you're saying that most of these people that do Kickstarters are like, hey, I got this great idea, but don't even have anything on paper.
Well, I'm not saying that most of them, but I'm saying that there is a substantial number that don't have their product at least ready in a draft form. At least it should be in a draft, maybe not edited. Maybe you still have some concepts that you want to add or try out. But you should have something that if one of your backers said, hey, can I see what you got? You have something. Kevin Crawford is a perfect example of how to do a proper gaming Kickstarter. You back his any of his projects. The moment you back it, you get a link to download the current document in PDF. So that, you know what you got.
Is that the guy
you know what you're in for?
Fat Dragon?
Kevin Crawford is was Red with the Red Tide supplement.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, what's that guy, that gentleman's name from Fat Dragon? I can't think of his name. Really cool dude.
Tom Tullis?
Is that what it is? The one we interviewed at North Texas RPG Con.
Yeah, it could be, I think it's Tom Tullis. Fat Dragon does, if you want inexpensive terrain, cities, dungeons to use on your table, actual tabletop, I mostly do virtual, but if you want physical stuff that isn't going to set you back, like other stuff like Dwarven Forge and the like, or Legendary Realms also puts out products. If you want something that you can just collapse, and if you can, you know, print it out at home on slightly thicker paper, almost like I don't know what weight, but if you're gonna do something on thicker paper, this stuff is an excellent, inexpensive solution to your gaming terrain. Fat Dragon is awesome, but for every company that has an awesome track record, you also have up and comers who haven't done it before. So there's another suggestion I'm going to make. Before you do your $40,000 Kickstarter, do a $4,000 Kickstarter, something small, something that you can get out there, learn the pros and cons, learn the problems you can run into, and build yourself a track record so people can say, oh, well, at least so-and-so has done a prior project. Look at that. It actually got into the backer's hands on time, and people seem to be happy with it. People are more likely to figure, all right, maybe I'll put a few bucks in your hands on your larger project if you have something behind you.
And do you have any Kickstarters you can recommend for people to look at right now that are currently going on that you can think of off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, sure.
Yeah.
There's a new printing of Swords and Wizardry. It's a new cover. It's a new art. I will say the internal art looks really good. You can back it for a buck. Not only do you get the PDF, but you also get a PDF adventure for free. So for a dollar, you're doing pretty well on that. Trying to think what else. I mentioned we're talking about terrain. We're talking about Legendary Realms, who's also a gaming store out in Plainview, Long Island, has an Ice Caverns and Terrains Kickstarter that's up right now. I actually have it open on my computer screen. I do like the look of the ice. That's actually something that's fairly unique. I wouldn't mind putting some money behind that, especially now that I'm actually gaming in person. My God.
I lived in Long Island for 20-something years of my life, and there was only one gaming shop in the immediate area where I lived, and the next thing was over going towards Queens.
Right.
And now there's like 5, 6, 7 gaming shops.
It's a beautiful thing. The only problem with me getting out to Legendary Realms when I first did this 3 weeks ago was the fact that coming from Queens and accidents on the Long Island Expressway, the Grand Central, and Northern State Parkway meant that what would have been, at that time of day, late afternoon, probably an hour and 15 minutes, came at 2 hours.
Ah, yeah. I don't know if you remember how far back you go. Remember Waterloo? That was a big place on Long Island.
I remember it. I never got to it. Probably because in my early and mid-20s, I didn't have a driver's license because I lived in the city. It wasn't really necessary.
A lot of people did that. They lived in the city and said, I don't need a driver's license at all.
Yeah. But then if you want to go anywhere outside the city, you go, oh, damn, I do need a driver's license.
Oh, yeah, you kind of do. But I understand that you don't really need a car in Manhattan or near anywhere. Most of the boroughs, you don't even need it. You just take the subway or the train or whatever you need to do, or the bus.
Well, that's the whole problem. It's like where I am in Queens, it's great because we're close to buses and one of the subway lines.
Yeah.
But if you go out to places like Whitestone and College Point, you might as well be out in Long Island because all you can have is buses, and a bus to a bus to a bus to a train. You could be commuting your whole day away.
Yeah, especially if you're on Long Island Railroad. I mean, forget
about it. Oh, yeah, if you miss the Long Island Railroad, it's like, oh, and my next train is in 32 and a half minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you need a car. Too bad. All right, cool. So there's some information about Kickstarters. You're pretty much going to have to do your own research on Kickstarters. There's not a lot that we can basically tell you other than the basics. I mean, Eric is... seen a lot and given a lot.
I'll give one other hint out for the Kickstarters, which I think is pretty important. When you do these Kickstarters, I know the importance of stretch goals because it makes people excited and they keep coming back and they're like, oh, wow, if we raise another 1,500, we get another 15, 16 pages of adventure in a book.
Doesn't that kill a lot of Kickstarters, though, that whole stretch goal thing?
Well, there's a way to... smart money is... that if you're going to do a stretch goal, first off, mugs, T-shirts, miniatures, these have all been the death of many a funded Kickstarter.
Something that's simple and easy to create, that's
right.
Kind of cool for the person who wants to get help with the stretch goals. I got it, okay.
Right. So but those things can kill you because it's a monetary output for this stuff. What you should do, my opinion, is that if you're going to offer extra stuff, you should be offering PDFs. You want an extra adventure, an extra, 12-page adventure you're going to throw in? Make it a PDF. It's going to cost you time and effort to put it together, but your cash outlay isn't there, so you're not hurting that bottom line, especially if you already have art assets and you can do your own layout or whatever.
Yeah. I guess that's probably the best thing. I mean, people want, especially if it's an old-school product, I know a lot of people want that physical product in your hand, but honestly, what does it matter at this point?
You can always make it, if it's in PDF, it's a stretch goal for free, or you can raise your pledge by $5 and you'll get it in print. Make it an option for the person who's backing, but don't put that cost on the actual producer because you start eating up your margin, and then once your margin goes negative, that's when you go, oh crap, I can't ship this stuff because I don't have money left. Myth and Magic, I'm talking about you.
Or how about the big infamous was that Dwemer Mount project?
Dwemer Mount, well, that went south because the creator basically came to he had a
family issues,
an impasse. Let's say, in producing it, and his notes had to get forwarded on to others who had to complete that project.
I think the impasse had to do with the death in the family, to be honest, and it maybe soured him doing anything to do with gaming after that.
It's quite possible. There's a lot of Kickstarters that have issues like that.
Yeah, and make sure if you do videos and stuff like that, that you take the time to actually look presentable in those videos, too, because... yeah, I know
you're making me laugh, because you know what I'm thinking about, right?
Yeah, we're thinking about the dude sitting on his couch with his socks, no shoes on. He's dressed up in T-shirt, and I think it was shorts, and he's just wearing his socks.
Yeah, up no on shoes. A table. So yep. He looks real relaxed, and you get to see his dirty socks. It was not a good...
Yeah.
Not a good piece.
Yeah, pledge now and you get a pair of dirty socks.
I have plenty of these. I only wear them for 3 days before changing. But this presentation is an awful. It's like in real life. If you're going out on a first date, you don't want to look like crap. Well, you know what? Your Kickstarter is your first date with people that are going to be looking at your product. Your product shouldn't look like crap. It should. Your Kickstarter page should read well. Avoid run-on sentences, spelling and grammar mistakes. Have somebody proofread it, at least one. And if they're not a professional proofreader, at least two. Because
I know
somebody goes to it and you're seeing misspellings. Now, the thing is, you put that... I only put it up. It took me like an hour to put it up. I wanted to get up real quick because I'm all excited about my project. But if you can't put together a proper presentation on your Kickstarter page, why should I put money in your hand? Why should I say, you want my $25? You can't even spell. You can't even write. And I think the product that you're going to put together is going to be any better than this? No. Well, and you only have one shot.
Well, I promise I'll have spell check on Eric when I do the final product.
spell check is great. You still have... Listen, it's the English language. Yeah. How many words? It's like, oh, well, we have so many words that are spelled differently but sound the same, and I am guilty for doing this myself a lot of times.
Oh, well, yeah.
And the whole thing between it and the possessive of it as opposed to the abbreviation of it is, I still don't understand it. But if I was putting together a Kickstarter page, I'd make sure I did it right. Well, somebody's going to look at that and see that as a failure.
There's actually a new program that I saw that you can actually attach to Safari, you know, on my Mac. I don't know if you could do it for other ones. I know for Safari, but it's called Grammarly. And actually, you have to pay for it. I wasn't going to pay for it, so I just demoed it just to see, and I typed a bunch of stuff, and it's amazing how much grammatically correct sentences I can do just by typing normal day sentences on Facebook.
Well, that is awesome, actually. I should check into that, because I hate going back to my blog, The Tavern, and looking at it 2 hours later and go, holy crap. What did I do? And then you have to go back in and edit a change after hundreds of people have already read your mistake.
And shook their head saying, Eric.
Eric, you still don't know the difference between it's and it's. What the heck?
Or your and your.
Yeah, that, and I know the difference between that one. That is just when I'm typing too fast, it sometimes does it itself. And you're like, ugh. Or the fact that whenever I try to spell the name Tim, I always spell it time. Yes, Tim Schwartz. I'm referring to every time I've talked about you.
I do that too. When I write Tim, I'll put time by accident.
Well, at least it's not me. I feel better now because that was something I noticed. I was like, oh my! And I really was trying to blame Blogger for that. I'm like, it must be changing Tim. It's making a spell check on its own. No, it's not. It's just my fingers.
All right. So one last thing I've noticed about Kickstarter is how much of an update should you give people and during the time frame? Say you have a 60-day time frame for the whole project that you want to raise the money in. And how many times should you update people? What type of updates do you think is usually the best, Eric, that you've seen based on your pledging and donating?
Well, if you hit a stretch goal, you should update.
Right.
People like to know, especially because a lot of times when you hit a stretch goal, you add a new stretch goal for people to look at and go, oh, we could get that one if we really push.
Let's say there's no stretch goals. It's just a straight out project. Right. Someone's like trying to raise, I don't know, $3,000 for his dream OSR product. And he's got 60 days to do it. Let's just say he hit the number and he's still got about 30 days left without any updates. Do you think he should have made an update or something?
He should, because you want your people to know that you're still around.
Yeah.
So let them know where you are in the project. Now, you shouldn't, when it comes to updates,
right,
you should be updating about the progress of the project. All right, we got more art in, whatever. It shouldn't be, if you look at your update and it's something that looks like a blog post or a Facebook post, then it probably doesn't belong as an update on your Kickstarter. It probably belongs as a blog or Facebook post or a forum post. Your update should reflect actually what is progressing with your Kickstarter. And that goes even after funding. If you go silent for 6 months after it's been funded and nobody hears from you, and you don't sign into your Kickstarter, because people can look and say, "Part of Creator last signed in on I don't know, August 27th. It is now, you know, middle of September. Where have they been?" They'll see. If it looks like you're not interested in your own work, then they're going to see that too. You know? And it's important, like I said, that your updates show what's progressing, or if there's an issue, what came up. These are your customers. I know certain Kickstarter creators like to say, well, they're not customers. They are and they're not investors. They are backing a dream. No. Listen.
No, they're investors, as far as I'm concerned.
They're investors / customers because they are saying, oh, you're promising that you're going to make this product. All right, I'm giving you money in exchange for a future gain of this product. You're not going to give me back cash. You're going to give me back a product. These are your customers. Treat them as such.
Right.
Because if you ever want to go back to this well, and Kickstarter and all these other crowdsourced funding methods.
Yeah.
They're a well. And sure, that well refills, but your own personal goodwill does not. And if you burn your customers, you've burned that well for you.
Well, yeah, obviously if you do a successful Kickstarter, you do your updates, you push out the book or whatever successfully, mm-hmm. The next time you go drop a project, those people that actually liked it and thought you did a good job will be like, hey, maybe I'll back Eric again because, you know, Eric did a good job the first time. This is a new, interesting idea, and yeah, I'll throw him a few bucks.
And all that being said, you will never see me run a Kickstarter. Thank you.
You're just afraid because of all the bad karma you're going to get back for all the stuff that you've said. That's all.
Oh, no. And there was part of that, but it's also, I know me. Yeah. I am disorganized blank blank, okay? Honest to God, I know my organizational skills, and Kickstarter does not fall into my wheelhouse, ballpark. I'm not even in a parking lot. I know my weakness. So now, could I serve as part of a team on a Kickstarter? Probably, but I would certainly not run one. If you want advice, I'm happy to give it, but we've given a lot of good advice here.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I was thinking about doing one with my business partner / friend Fitz for Mazes and Perils, but it's kind of like one of those, you know, what are we going to do type thing. It's kind of scary to, you know, get into Kickstarter mode, so.
You know, Kickstarter, you are basically putting your hand out and saying, I have a dream, somebody put money in my hand so I can accomplish it.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is it, think about it. That's pretty much what it is. So, if you have a dream, that you better present it well.
Yeah.
But like I said, the best advice out of everything I've mentioned here is, first impressions are just that. They're first impressions. They're the only impression a lot of times. Because if you give a bad first impression, people walk away. You don't have an opportunity to get them back.
Wow,
they're gone.
Yeah. That's a good thing. I can definitely I know about Fitz handling it. He will make sure that the thing that we put up to introduce it is going to be written, rewritten, edited, rewritten, and then edited again for perfection because he's just that damn good about writing. So, oh, trust me, some of the stuff that I've written, he's taken and made into like miracle juice or whatever you want to call it.
Awesome. Well, like I said, that's it. Your first impressions that you can generate, that is money in the bank or that is a loan you'll never repay if you screw it up because you are that screwed if your first impression is that bad. And secondly, don't go into a practice without having, at the very least, a usable draft that you have. So God forbid life happens, you know, a meteor comes crashing into the Dallas-Fort Worth area and
thanks.
You know, you're welcome, and there's like no internet for like 6 weeks or power, and you know, when it finally comes back up, everyone's like going, oh, well, Vince, you promised us that we'd have updates, it's been 6 weeks. Well, at least you have your draft is there, as opposed to you losing and having nothing. At least you can say, well, listen, alright, well, as we get closer, but listen, I'll show you where we're at. If you don't have that, then you have nothing. And God, what if you have a writer's block and suddenly your great idea becomes nothing, a blank piece of paper, but you have people's money, like we said, but that kind of happened prior. You don't want to be put in that position.
Right. Yeah. I know. It's just one of those things that you have to think about and make sure you do it right. And you notice there's a lot of people that will do Kickstarter and just totally just screw it up and then redo the same exact thing all over again.
Yep, and usually they go, well, I asked for $40,000, I raised $680, and it was, I didn't want it to be a failed Kickstarter, so a day before it would have ended, I canceled it. So since I couldn't get $40,000, I'm going to ask for $27,500. Listen, you couldn't raise $700 before, how are you going to raise $27,000? And I've seen this on some stuff that has looked really good. And then listen, always read the biography of the people that put these Kickstarters up. Because sometimes you get the warning sign, like, well, listen, this Kickstarter looks really good. It's this game with great art. And Well, all right. Let me read this person's background to figure out why it's not raising money. I left my job in whatever well-paying industry to follow my dream of writing games. And this is the first game. Now, they've already tried to Kickstarter twice before. Both times failed. First, second time, I think they lowered their goal. The third time, they doubled it. Like, if you were like, I'm going to aim big. Maybe if I ask for $80,000, I'll get $80,000.
No, you should start with something small, like a 2,000, yes, or maybe even 1,000. I mean, 5,000 would probably be a lot, but that's what, you know, I would think 2,000. That's something small, might be obtainable. It's a little, maybe a little risky, but enough that if it fails, it fails. What are you going to do?
Right. It's hard. If it's one thing, like we're talking about, if I did a Kickstarter, I'm not. And I'm just saying, but hypothetically, if I did...
Breaking news, folks. Tankar is doing it Kickstarter.
No.
Okay.
This is a complete hypothetical here. But what I am saying is, if I did, from Tankar's Tavern, my blog, from my online presence, on Facebook and G+, I would have a basic customer base. Which makes no sense, but... You know what I mean? I would come into it with a certain amount of a following where I could make an assumption. I'm sure there's a formula for it, of how much money I could expect to raise just from those that know me. And if you're not coming into it with a presence in social media, you, by doing smaller Kickstarters, you're now not just gaining presence in Kickstarter and proving that you can do the work, you're also increasing your profile on social media, which again raises the number of people who might actually back you because it's you as opposed to some random person.
Yeah.
See, like, Vince, you have a following. You are known. When you do a Kickstarter, there will be people that will go, oh, Vince is doing this? All right, well, I know Vince does good work. And, you know, and you have that basic level of support just because of it being you. Now, once you do a small Kickstarter to get your feet wet, and now you have other people who go, oh, wow. And I didn't know who Vince was before, but I backed his other Kickstarter because it looked cool. It was, you know, it was inexpensive, and, well, he does good work, and then you just build on it. It's like building a long tail in a lot of ways. That's why some companies do a lot of Kickstarters, because each one shows that they can do the work, and now you're more confident in their ability to get even further outside the box or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mazes and Perils Deluxe, when I finally did that with Fitz, I think that was one of those. Some people knew about it. They, you know, they voted for it to begin with. And I guess that was kind of touching the toe into the water type thing for us. You know, people see, oh, well, he did it. Let's see what he did again, and we'll check it out type thing. And like, oh, okay, so it actually did do something. Oh, okay, that's kind of cool, so...
Hopefully. Kinda cool. It is cool, dude. Kinda cool.
Stop. I don't like talking about myself, so that's why I say that.
No. Believe me, I understand that. But no, it Masons and Perils is a very good release, and it's a very good option if you want to do old school gaming. And I think the idea of getting more supplements out for it can just, you know, again, build that tail and can only be good for it. And the fact that it's pretty much compatible with all the old school adventures out there right out of the box. You don't have to convert. It's an awesome thing.
Yeah. Well, I tried to make it so it was pretty easy for someone to pick up. And Brian and Fitz, who was writing and editing with me, he also, from his point of view, he looked at it to say, because he was more into newer games at the time than old school games, and he was kind of one of those people that hadn't played it in a while, so he was looking at it from that point of view, so that kind of helped in a way, too.
I think I hear Donka commenting in the background.
Glenn's not
here. No, Donka, there's no Glenn here. We're sorry. Yeah. No?
There we go. Special guest appearance by Donka this week, folks.
Yeah, and I had to say the name Glenn. She's like, where?
All right, well, anyway, I hope this answered the question to anyone out there. We're looking for Kickstarters and getting advice about Kickstarter for old school products. And I think we're going to leave it at that for this week for a nice little 30-minute show for you, letting you know about Kickstarters, giving you some information, and hopefully you'll shoot us an email if you have any more questions. oldschoolpodcast@dgstexas.com. Head over to our website, dgstexas.com, and leave us some feedback on iTunes or on the website or via Eric's blog, whatever you want to do. And that is tankerstavern.com. See, I said it right this time.
Yes, you did. Thank you, sir.
We're going to say, well, Eric, what did you think about the last show? We had Glenn and Crispy on as the secondary hosts this time.
Very good, man. I like this. I'm really enjoying the whole setup. You have assembled a good team, Kimosabi.
Awesome. Well, cool. We'll be back in the... Peace and loving game and all that stuff. Bye.
Bye, folks.